Sabres Live is presented by Seneca Resorts and Casino. Nothing else comes close.
Less apocalyptic, but smokier. Oh. That is the outlook today. It's amazing what the threat of arbitration can do to our environment. This is Sabres Live with Marty.
It makes the air quality bad.
Really does. A lot of hot air if it ever gets that far.
Yes.
But a lot of arbitrations potentially get settled well ahead of time. Those stories and more still to come here on Sabres Live. But most importantly, bring it in, folks. Giving. And we're taking, because we're taking and redistributing the money through the community. It's Give 716 Day. It is give716.org for all the latest and all the not-for-profits in our community that are involved this year, Marty, in year six, as we have raised over $7 million in total and counting. We have over 600 not-for-profits involved this year.
Well, it is a big hour because the power hour, the incentive lineup right now, starting at noon, is the Beer Saber. The first 500 donations of $117.60 or more will get a Beer Saber along sent to them. So you've been looking to get a Beer Saber. You didn't get to a playoff game for it. You weren't able to find one. This is your chance. There's 500 of them. They will go quick. So I'm telling you, go on give716.org right now, donate over $117.60, and you will be a lucky recipient of a Beer Saber if you get in before all 500s are gone. So that is awesome. We had the great launch party last night again, Duffer. Yeah. I just want to give a shout out to we take a lot of people, picture with people. We have the signs, and I tell them, make sure you post on Instagram or on X, because I want to retweet a few of them that have retweeted pictures or reposted pictures. EA Educational Foundation, my Blue Star mothers that always take care of me.
Big turnout, one of the more vocal groups last night.
Absolutely, and they did have a winner of one of the entry tickets. Catholic Charities of Buffalo, you guys were awesome. YMCA of Western New York. Bellissima Productions, that's a theater production. They go wherever. They go in a lot of different places. They were fun, so they've all hit me up on Instagram. I posted on my story. If there's others out there that I know there's plenty others out there, but just go ahead. Put it on your story, tag me, I'll repost it. It's going to be awesome.
Give716.org for all the latest. We're approaching 1.1 million already this year alone, with still just under 12 hours to go in the campaign. And we'll have golden ticket hours between 8 p.m. and midnight tonight, which is a great way to cap off this day.
How about the donation by Duke Riley yesterday?
Well,
I mean,
Duke kicked it off. We could spend the entire time here talking about that. I mean, this is 6 years in, and we've never had a single donor step up to the level that Duke Riley, who'd previously been J.W. Danforth, was the head of the companies, enjoying retirement but not retiring from being active in the community. That's the crazy part. He matched in that first hour last night donations up to $71,600. Incredible. Absolutely.
So you're looking
incredible
at the first hour. Okay, if people donated at least 71,000 together.
He matched
that.
Which we obviously roared
went
past.
Over. Yeah. Yeah. But that means that's 140,000 right away in the first hour that you're like, hey, we're going to get that and more. And it went really quick. We were at 250, 300, 400,000. Yeah. We were over 500,000 when I left last night. We got to a million just in the last hour. I mean, it's going really well.
All right. As far as hockey news is concerned, we have Danny Gare coming up on the show. It's a big day for him. And Shayna Goldman, as we round out another week of our programming here on Sabres Live. And local hockey connections with new roles. Jeremiah Crow, who you got to know really well through all your time at Harbor Center, elevated through the ranks of the Sabres organization, now finds himself as the Leafs director of player personnel.
Yeah, and obviously Jeremiah Crow, you know, I didn't know him when I started working with him at Harbor Center with the Academy of Hockey. Very involved through the scouting with, you know, juniors and college, and then the pro side of it when it came to the Buffalo Sabres, did a great job with that scouting department and Jerry Fortin and everybody. But it seemed like now with you know, Jarmo Kekalainen bringing in his people and bringing it more more staff to the scouting department, that maybe that opportunity was going to continue elsewhere. And scouts do that a lot, and they move from organization to organization because they want to continue to grow. And
well, this
I think
certainly
this is
beyond scouting when you're taking on a, you know,
a directing role.
A directing role.
Like, he's going to be in charge of a whole pro scouting department with the Leafs. So congratulations to Jeremiah. He's a good friend. He's got a lot of local ties. It was a Clarkson guy. So, you know, we had Matt Vince, Ryan Vince here, not goalies, but Ryan Vince here. My buddy Leggio knows him. I played with him. So, it's great for Jeremiah. Unfortunately, he's going to the enemy. Hopefully, he left his files behind.
And the Amerks were featured prominently on our show yesterday and today. General Manager Stacey Roost announced that the team has rounded out its coaching staff with, again, a local tie in Scott Mosier. He'll be an assistant coach, replacing the role that was vacated by Vinny Prospel. And Neil Conway comes in as the goaltending coach.
Yeah, and for Scott Mosier, got to know him a little bit doing summer camps with the Academy of Hockey and some of the work, but he definitely has worked in a lot of different roles and capacity at the youth level, college level, international level. So he brings in a lot of experience, and this is going to be, from my personal view, a really good fit with what is Michael Leone and Nathan Paich's group. And I think that the local ties are always good. It's not just trying to promote youth hockey and players that get drafted and the Junior Sabres and Canisius and Niagara and all of that. It's also promoting coaches, right? Local coaches and hockey people. And for Scott Mosier, that's a great promotion going to the Amerks.
And from a, you know, the goaltending standpoint, obviously, you know, we've seen an awful lot. Seamus Kotick having great hands on role there, and Seamus remains with the organization, and obviously in, you know, a development and scouting role, obviously.
Yeah, so. And for Conway, I mean, this is one of those things where now you want somebody that's going to be in Rochester every day. For Seamus Kotick, look, he was doing scouting and development. He was going to look at the prospects, so he'll continue to do that role. But having a goalie coach in Rochester every day to work with, you know, the prospects, and maybe you got a couple of young guys in Ratzlaff and Tobias Lehnen and that were kind of pushed in a role last year at Rochester at some point. Maybe you got to surround them with somebody there every day. That's what this role is going to be all about.
All right. Lastly, from a NHL and not arbitration standpoint, because they avoided it, obviously, last night. A couple of big deals came in, and we'll talk to Shayna Goldman about them a little bit more. But obviously, Philadelphia gets Trevor Zegras done. It's
big
a
deal.
4-year deal, 9.125. You say that, and then now we're so accustomed to everything going north of 10. You know, but Zegras has never hit 70 points in his career. So,
but he had a really good year last year.
And
fit a good role with the Flyers. So he goes to $9 million. The Winnipeg Jets signed Cole Perfetti to a 5-year deal at $6 million a year. Look, Perfetti 2 years ago was maybe on the same step as Zegras. Where are they going to go?
Yeah.
Zegras took a step forward last year. Perfetti took a step back. So Perfetti gets $6 million. Could be a 20 goals, 40 assists guy, 60 points. If he does, it's going to be perfect for the Winnipeg Jets.
Yep.
But you look at Zegras, he gets $3 million per year because he got to almost 70 points last year.
Yeah, it's an interesting time. And again, the Sabres are fortunate to have a lot of their key pieces, you know, locked in up front. And we'll
see. Back to you mentioning Tage Thompson's contract years ago. And you said, as this goes, he's going to continue to drop and drop and drop in where he ranks in the league in South.
Oh, gosh, yeah.
I mean, Trevor Zegras is making $2 million more than Tage Thompson. That's basically what it is.
Yeah, and I remember at the time saying that if Tage simply became a 30-30-60 guy consistently year after year, this is what this contract is going to be perfect for. And he's obviously exceeded that. Danny Gare exceeds our expectations all the time. He is with us here on Sabres Live on a big day for his golf tournament, his annual Connect Life golf tournament. Danny, how's it going? I mean, I hope you guys are surviving the smoke out on on the links today.
Well, it's like that pea meal bacon, Canadian bacon we're getting here from there. You know, it's a little smoky, but we've got a few liquids to hopefully push that smoke down the throat, but it's all great. Right. We've got a full house, boys, and I always wanted to thank you two for your support. You guys have done this. It's my 11th year now, and Duffer, you've been so great here, and we've done the broadcast from here, and Marty, again, your support with Connect Life, you're always always there when counted on. You do, you know, their television spot for them, and we miss you, but thank you for having me on.
I know. I miss you guys, too. But, you know, you started this tournament when it was units, right? And then it became Connect Life and all of that.
Yes.
But you tell this story every year at the tournament, how you got involved with units and Connect Life. So if you want to share that again for our listeners, because it has a personal story, your involvement with the great work that they do.
Yeah, you know, I had a very good friend that I've known for over 50 years when I first came here to play. His name is John Dandies, and John had a kidney transplant and about 13 years ago, and John was working for the Bisons as the president for Bob and Mindy Rich, and has a great job and sits on many boards, but he sat on the board for units in Connect Life when he had the kidney transplant. And then we had a gala dinner at the Mary Seton Hall in Kleinhans the year after he had the kidney, and he asked me to be get a speaker. So I said, sure. And it was a wonderful night. And it was kind of a really interesting because they had on one side pictures of youngsters, teenagers that unfortunately had passed, you know, and had transferred recipients to the other side of the room that had pictures of the recipients that got it.
Wow.
Their organs or eyes or heart transplant. So the families were all there, and they all came together, and they didn't do that in the past, but they did this night. They weren't allowed to, but they all came together. And I remember one of the fathers saying, oh, you have my son's eyes, or you a mother said, you have my, you know, my son's heart, and you know, and they were hugging. And it was one of the most moving experiences I've ever had in my life. It was overwhelming. And I said to John after, because of that, I said, what can I do to help? And we threw it around a little bit, and he said, well, what about a golf tournament, a charity golf tournament? So here we are 11 years later, and I'm honoring two people today. One will be John for all of his work and countless people across Western New York that he inspired. His legacy will live on and, you know, enhance hopefully organ donation and blood donation. And the other gentleman that I'm going to honor is our good friend Louis Billetaire from Chefs.
Yeah.
He has been here, guys. And you know, Louis, he does everything and doesn't ask for anything. And he doesn't ask for any type of trying to get support from other people. He gives it all the time. So he's been here since day one. So I'm going to honor him also. He's a special friend. And we really appreciate his support always.
Danny, that's incredibly powerful. I mean, you really took us like right into the moment of what that must have felt like to see so many people on both sides of it. And I feel like, you know, we live in this, thankfully, especially here on Give 716 Day, we're talking about organizations that are in need of help. Have you found that beyond, you know, trying to raise money through an event like this, that a singular goal has been awareness?
Right.
Specifically, and how have you seen and felt that grow in our community since this tournament has started?
Well, you know, sadly, on an average, there's 17 people die each day because of organ was not made available, okay? And this is across the nation. And we have really pushed along with Sarah Dina, who works with me on the golf tournament. And she is the senior director of communications and external affairs here. And the promotion is we go to schools now. We try to get and make sure that, you know, the school kids, when they turn and get their driver's license, they can put their, organ donor on their license. We do, a number of different events, you know, that Connect Life does to make awareness. But this is the biggest tournament I've had in 11 years. The most people and the most sponsors, guys. It's been unbelievable. And you would have thought maybe it's the Sabres run that made it happen. I don't know.
When hockey's good, Danny, everybody benefits from it.
Everything's good, Marty.
Good. Yeah. Hey, let me ask you, because you have had Sabres alumni, Bills alumni. You had Lou Piccone sing the national anthem every year. Did he sing again today?
He came today, and Pick was the best. You know, we had a little moment of silence for Mr. Dandies, and he came, and he said, my voice is a little raspy. I said, well, did you go to bed early last night? You know, did you have some wine? He said, no, it's the smoke. But he banged it out of the park, Marty. He was great. Yeah. And then I have Mark, I have, I'm trying to think of Eric Bolton.
Yeah.
Also, Peter Rafchuk, Rip Simonix here. Rick Dudley came. My brother, listen to this one. Oh, Derek Smith, Tony McKegney, my two line mates.
Yeah.
And it's harder and harder to get guys because everybody's getting older and guys don't stay here in the summertime, but it's worked out well. And I've been bouncing around playing a few holes with the different foursomes. But I had a real treat. I found out my brother Ernie, who was a scout for the Bruins and the Leafs, flew in from Vernon, British Columbia the other day to play 1,500 miles. He's playing with my sister Glenda also came in. Her husband's Tom Rainey. Tom is here playing today. They flew in. They played. They're playing in, from Calgary. And then my cousin Doug from Edmonton, my dad's sister's son, is here also. So it's been great. It's been Danny Gare Friends and Family Day on 716.
That's awesome.
That's how it should be.
That's great. Yeah. Boltz was texting me earlier, so maybe he was enjoying the cart ride more than the golf at some point. So good.
Well, Boltz has been a great supporter. He's been here for, you know, the past, I don't know how many years. And like I say, I appreciate that. I appreciate the Sabres as the major sponsor. You know, ECMC is a secondary sponsor, along with CompuMed, a group out of Toronto. So our sponsorship has been really strong, and we appreciate all the support, and especially the players, you know, that come out and have been here. There's a lot of guys that have played here since day one. And it's just a fun day, and it really is great to see, you know, a lot of old friends.
Amazing. Danny, at the top of the hour, the NHL full schedule is going to come out for the upcoming 84-game season. We know the Sabres open on the road on Thursday, October 1st in Columbus. The home opener is here October 3rd, Saturday, against the Chicago Blackhawks. What are you looking forward to now that we've just talked about the renewed excitement around this team?
Well, it's funny. You know, I happened to be at a place not far from me having lunch, and it was in Clarence, and Lindy came walking in to get some soup to go. And I said, Lindy, I yell at him. He goes, tickets. He says, what are you doing? I said, I'm having lunch. He said, well, I'll sit down and have some lunch with you. So we chatted, and Lindy was so, you know, happy. I congratulate him on the great year and what he accomplished and his team. And he just said, you know, it's just the start of things. And I know that, you know, they've lost a few players, but he says they're, you know, they're young prospects. He says, you know, we're not kind of done with what we're doing yet, but he was very happy about the future, and as I am too. I'm excited about it all. I think the fans, you know, in the time here from the playoffs, I was here for a month. The city was like, I couldn't believe the excitement. I mean, it's like back in 2009 when I played, you know, or to six it was maybe, but it was just great to see the team playing so well, getting back, you know, in the playoffs. It was funny. I went down to the Sabre store to get my plaques. I put a Sabre puck on them always for the winners. And I've never had – I saw these Sabre playoff pucks. So I've never had a Sabre playoff puck on my plaque since I've had this tournament. So I said, put those on.
That's awesome.
That's the best. Now that the Montreal-Buffalo rivalry has renewed with this series in the second round last year, is that where you're going to circle your visits back to Buffalo when Montreal or when Tampa is in town with the way Tampa-Buffalo went last year?
Well, I'll probably wait. I want to go to the opener. You know, I'll probably wait a little while and then go down mid-October to Tampa. And then I come back in November for some games for Thanksgiving and Christmas. So we'll see who's playing. But, yeah, no, I'm just excited about the fact that, you know, the confidence that this team has in playing, the fans, again, coming out, supporting. Mm-hmm. And they're a fun team to watch. I mean, they're mm-hmm. fast, they're quick. Yeah. And you know, they've really, really come into their own, a lot of these guys. And I like what they've signed, you know, Benny, and, you know, they've signed yeah. Krebs, you know. Yep. Good Westerners.
Yes.
So.
Yeah. Chilliwack, BC yeah. with Benny. That's good.
Yeah.
Danny, congrats on another outstanding event, and we thank you so much for the insight today. Great to see the energy.
All right, guys,
energy.
Thanks. I'm going to go out and hit the ball and then come back and have the honorees and little luncheons, and then I'll have a beer.
Cheers.
Perfect. Danny Gehr, Raptors Club member and Sabres Hall of Famer.
Yes.
Shayna Goldman from The Athletic is next. Still a ton to get to around the NHL. Stay with us.
Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
Attention. See what I did there?
Yes.
Sabre fans, do not miss your shot to win a pair of tickets for the opener, the home opener at KeyBank Center, October 3rd against Bo Byram and the Blackhawks. Visit sabres.com/enter for your chance. Shayna Goldman from The Athletic. Welcome in, Shayna. How's your summer going so far?
It's going well. I mean, hey, we thought everything was about to go quiet, and all of a sudden we have news again. Thank
the
you,
Detroit. The Iser plan. Bye-bye.
Hey, no
the
Marty
Iser
plan.
Sham.
We
come
were
on.
Told yesterday.
Yeah, we were at a live event last night when we had a listener come up and emphatically say, no Marty plan, ever. No Marty
because
plan.
Because I
no
said
Marty
on
plan.
The show yesterday, anything that is dubbed the plan, the Iser plan, the Shanna plan, it doesn't work. So I don't ever want to have the Marty plan. And if I do come up with a Marty plan, do the opposite. You'll be very successful at that. So that is definitely one of the things. But quickly, I want to know this or that. The opening home opener for the Sabres is Buffalo hosting Chicago. Where do you see Patrick Kane be? With the Sabres or with the Blackhawks on that October 3rd Saturday night?
I think the Sabres are a better fit for him because they're a much deeper team and I think have the speed to make up for what he you know, what he lacks. They could use the playmaker. I think he's going to choose Chicago because I feel like he's someone who wants to be in more of a starring role. And at this point, he has a better shot of doing it there than here.
Okay.
Hmm. I'm not sure how I feel about that. It's a very well thought out answer. I think he's going to go to Chicago as well.
Going back to yeah. like where it started yeah. and finish that way. I think that's
but I'm
very
also
enticing,
really
yeah.
good at being wrong. So
it's not the Marty plan.
Detroit did make the biggest news yes. of the week, though, thanks to Steve Yzerman stepping back from his role. And now the search is on for their next leader. Mm-hmm. While their on-ice leader awaits, we assume, still a trade. What do you make of the Red Wings situation?
I think the most interesting element of this is the timing, right? Because this was a general manager trusted to run the draft and trusted to run free agency and now make the change, right? And he's still leading the way until they have a replacement. It feels like they're kind of working from behind here. If you had said to me they're making this decision at the end of the year after they crashed out once again, the month of March crushes them, everyone's moving up around them in the Atlantic Division, I would say it's about time because this has not worked out. I understand Yzerman's importance to the franchise for all of the reasons. I understand that the team technically is in a better spot from where he started, from where he left off, even though they really haven't gained enough traction. But that's what makes this so fascinating. You're deciding to do that now when Dylan Larkin still hasn't been traded. I don't know if this changes his status at all. Simon Edvinson is still an RFA, and that contract has not been figured out. And that, you know, should have been one that was handled months ago, I would say, personally. So, you know, it's going to be interesting to see who they pick and how quickly they can hit the ground running when so much of that, like, early frenzy has already taken place.
Now, Steve Yzerman had some success with the Tampa Bay Lightning in building that team. Is it as easy as saying you got to find the right coach? Because it feels like Detroit never found the right coach. Or is it, well, they had Victor Hedman and Nikita Kucherov and Stamkos. And is it the players in Detroit? Or is it maybe behind the bench that Steve Yzerman failed in his time with the Red Wings as a GM?
I'm going to say both. Okay. Tampa Bay had the core players. They went through those tough years and, you know, they weren't in as bad of a spot, right? Like Ken Holland left the Red Wings in a pretty awful spot. So, you know, that's part of the challenge coming into
it. Well, in Ken's defense, he always said the day Lidstrom retired should be the day that he retires. So he probably knew his ability to maintain a high level of success was going to be very, very daunting.
And yet he's had multiple jobs with teams who want to contend since. Amazingly, we have here. But the coaches, too, it feels like every coach that's been selected was wrong. And not only that, they had just too much room to struggle, right? Like Derek Lalonde, you could have made the case, should have been, you know, given the boot a while ago for someone who ran such a good penalty kill in Tampa Bay. And then him and Bob Uffner, like whatever happened there, that was disastrous. That was historically bad. And I feel like it was just given way too much room. The other part of it too, I would say, is the front office. Because with Tampa Bay, like you look at it, Steve Yzerman leaves. Obviously they win after he leaves, and it's a lot of the groundwork that he put in place. But Julian Breezeball is able to like take over and help extend this window, right? And they had Darsh working there up until last year. Like that was, I think, a stronger front office with more perspectives than we've seen in Detroit. Detroit's front office is filled with former players, and it's like former players are bust. And I feel like Tampa Bay having a little bit more diversity and, you know, just all different perspectives and roles, I think helped the decision-making process all along, because they were willing to listen to data. They had, you know, input of people who were really good managing the salary cap, and you have the former players as well. You have a little bit of everything. And I feel like Detroit hasn't leveled up enough to match that.
Well, you mentioned the former players that are in the fold. Nick Lidstrom is there. Sean Orkoff is there. Chris Draper is there. Mm-hmm. Do you see one of them emerging as the GM, or do you think they go off the board? And, I mean, I kind of floated in three names yesterday. Brendan Shanahan could be one. Rob Blake could be another. Mark Bergevin is here in Buffalo in the front office. So do you see them sticking with internal people or going out of the organization?
I feel like internally, Sean Horkoff is probably the name that stands out to me the most. I think that, listen, they should be calling everyone. They should be calling the general managers who have been with teams forever. They should be calling the up-and-comers. They should be looking at nerds. Look at a little bit of everything and just hear what everyone has to say and try to build your perspective off that. But I think it would be nice to see them, you know, take a more untraditional path here, just because they went the former player route. It didn't quite work out. And I think we're seeing that phase out a little bit around the NHL, and you look at the issues that Pat Verbeek has faced this summer and Steve Yzerman, and it's that hard-nosed general manager. Like, I don't think that works as well. And I think when you look around at, I don't know, the Stanley Cup champs having Eric Tulsky, and you look at, you know, Sonny Mehta coming into New Jersey and taking such a different approach, those are the models I'd want. And I think also you could look at like the former agent path is an interesting one. We're seeing what Hughes is doing in Montreal. Like, I would want to be trying to learn from all the competitors around me that are doing better. But I do think it's important. Say they don't go for an analytics GM. Okay, maybe find someone at the assistant general manager level who brings that perspective and have that give and take a little bit more.
Well, the one thing we've certainly learned in the fallout of Anaheim's situation, and to a lesser extent others, is that the agents and players do hold so much of the power. And no matter what the perceived philosophy is of the general manager and the hockey department, sometimes you just can't get to a deal depending on what the other side wants to do. And especially at a time when the landscape has changed and is continuing to change so much. That being said, last night, Trevor Zegras, 4 years, 9.125 per with the Flyers. Cole Perfetti, 5 years, $6 million per with the Winnipeg Jets. Which team will be happier with the contract when it expires?
Ooh, that's a good one. I'm gonna say Philly, looking at the big picture here, because I feel like their cap situation I really like right now. I feel like they're building to a good place that in 4 years, ideally, they're a contender by then, right? So I think they'll have a very good gauge on what Trevor Zegras is. And ideally by then, they have a true 1C that helps slot him appropriately in the lineup too. Because like I think in a perfect world, he's a second line player for them, a really good second line player for them, right? I think he really found his footing there. I think that in 5 years, Perfetti could be looking for a raise, and I think he'll have earned it. But I don't know where the Jets are going to be at that point. They are in such a tough position right now, and I feel like they haven't positioned themselves well enough to contend in recent years, and they haven't positioned themselves for the future in recent years. So you're just like, are you going to be in limbo? Like, I feel like they're going to be starting over this process maybe in 5 years, that looking to pay Perfetti that next big contract might not line up with their timeline at that point.
Why are we so critical on when, and I I'm with everybody here. Like, I mean, why are we so critical with Winnipeg when they're only a year removed from winning the President's Trophy? Like, why is there no bounce back ability? Like, the perception is this team has no chance to bounce back to what they were.
Well, the hellebuck of it all is one of it. But the other part, too, is that core was always flawed, right? Like, we look at the years of Scheifele and Connor, and every time they're cooking, we don't compare them to the best core players in the world. And it's not like the Jets have a strong enough supporting cast that you go, okay, well, if you don't have a McDavid and Draisaitl, because not everyone can have a McDavid and Draisaitl, or even a MacKinnon and an Aitches, right? Like, the Sabres right now, you look at it and go, they have three scoring lines at the very least. They have all this up-and-coming talent. They have so much excitement around them. You can't say the same for the Jets. I feel like they've just taken such a passive approach, which you can't do when, sure, you have Morrissey and sure, you have Hellebuck, but Scheifele and Connor should not have been, you know, your cornerstones unless you had everything and more behind them, and they chip away at it like they never replaced Ehlers. The 2C situation with Ehlers was always flawed. I don't think they put enough into Perfetti's development to this point. So they had the defensive structure, they have the otherworldly goaltending, but they've never had enough substance in front of it. And I feel like the year they win the President's Trophy, the structure was there at least. It was not just goaltending or bust. But even they come into it this season and you see passive offseason, high shooting percentage, great save percentage. And when those two numbers dip, which is pretty inevitable the way that they were going without the substance below it, everything crashes and burns.
And I hate to say this because I really like this person.
Scott Arneil.
Like, Paul Maurice was a different thing. Rick Bowness was a different thing. And now I'm like, Scott Arneil, like, I like what you're trying to do, but it doesn't feel like it's going to have the boom effect that maybe they wanted, or that leading them in the way that they want. That's my issue.
And it's also Detroit-esque too, though. Like, the coach needs a little bit more to work with here, right? It's always been fascinating the way Maurice walked away from it, right?
Yeah.
And then landed where he... And so there's a lot done, and it's hard. It's hard for Winnipeg to be like everybody else because of the no trades and all that kind of stuff and the limitations. It goes quick from being a President's Trophy to this.
You mentioned, Shayna, that they have good players, but they don't have the best players. I don't know if you watched the ESPYs last night, but Connor McDavid voted the best hockey player. It was MacKinnon, Kucherov, Macklin, Celebrini. I said yesterday on the show, I think McDavid's still the best hockey player, but I'd be surprised to see where that goes, right? Celebrini's going to be on the cover of EA Sport, NHL 27. Like, do you think it's closer maybe now more than ever, or is it still Connor McDavid ahead of the pack?
He's still ahead of the pack, but I think that there's less distance between him and the rest of the pack, and it's not because of him. Although it would help if he had a capable team around him for one minute here. I'm not asking for much. But I do think, we're seeing the bar raised across the board. You look at the Norris Trophy race and the fact that we have so many defensemen who are in the MVP conversation, right? It's still Quinn Hughes and Cale Makar and then everybody else, but I feel like even that gap has closed, right? Because it's Rasmus Dahlin is right behind him. Amir Heiskanen is right there. And you have 10 guys that can win the Norris in a given year. So I think that's true here. We've had so many tight Hart Trophy races among the forwards because the forwards are that dominant. Like, Nikita Kucherov is the best winger in the world, and he's not stopping. Even though you would think at this point maybe he'd start to slow down, he isn't. And Celebrini coming up the ranks, like, he wasn't just, this is the best young player. It's like, he is in the thick of it. He is top five, most valuable player in the world. And he's doing things again with no support that I can see how other players are leveling up to close the gap between them and McDavid, still leading the way. You know, Draisaitl's behind him too, but it does feel like we could start seeing that race get a little bit more interesting here. I don't know how many other young players are ready to take that leap to the next level, like Bedard, Carlson, they're all fantastic. They're all getting there, but there's still a gap between them and Celebrini. But with MacKinnon still in his prime, you could see him pushing, he's one of the best players in the world. I don't know if MacKinnon or anyone could ever catch up to McDavid at this point. It feels like it's going to be Celebrini that's going to be going to be the guy that's going to get up to that level.
Well, congrats to Declan Farmer last night too, through the ESPYs, and we were so lucky to see Declan in his youngest teenage years when he joined, you know, the U.S. Paralympic team. Mm-hmm. And he is now, you know, a four-time Paralympic gold medalist and by far the greatest scorer. It was stunning to watch him once again as the U.S. won gold and rightfully deserving last night of best athlete with a disability. So that, you know, from a hockey standpoint, puts a bow on the ESPYs. And then we talk about the home opener for the Sabres, which is fast approaching now, can we say that? Or is it still, like, we're so excited?
Faster because it's October 1st, well, October 3rd, so that's what it is, yes.
And we'll have the full schedule out at 1 p.m. today. But, Shayna, which games should Sabres fans be circling when this whole schedule gets unveiled at the top of the hour?
Well, Montreal. Have to go Montreal, right? Yeah. Two Atlantic Division teams that are going to be jostling for position, who had the playoff battle. Tampa Bay. It's there. There's the Heat from last year's matchups. We didn't get in the playoffs, and I assume we're going to see them going head-to-head a lot. I think, too, like, it's going to be the Panthers and the Leafs and the expected contenders who fell flat last year, but now we're going to try keeping pace again with these up-and-coming teams. I think that's going to be really exciting. And I also, you know, I have a soft spot for Red Wings Sabres the last couple of years because it's been the two of them. You're, you know, watching these teams together going, are you guys going to rise up the ranks? And it feels like the way we talked about the Sabres a few years ago is where the Red Wings are now, right? Like in the post-Jack Eichel era, that's like what we're looking at for Detroit. So I think it'll be interesting to see how Detroit handles that when Buffalo's passed them by. And I think that'll be fun, too.
Notice nobody ever mentions Ottawa in these divisional
games. Well, that's what
games.
I was going to say, because when I was a kid and we had the Adams division with Buffalo, Boston, Montreal, Quebec, and Hartford, my dad is construction company that he worked with for, they had season tickets, and we would get like maybe two or three games. And somehow we always ended up with the Hartford games because nobody wanted them. And I'm thinking, like, the Atlantic division is so good, but who's the one team in the Atlantic division that you're like, eh, They're the team I don't want to go to. Is it Ottawa? Is it Detroit? Like, that's kind of where my head is at right now because the Atlantic is so good.
Yeah, it's like it shouldn't be Ottawa, and I feel bad I'm putting them there because I don't – I think that they're in this interesting position. I really like the William Eklund acquisition, but I'm still looking at them going, like, you're in the same position you were last year. And obviously they were dealt a pretty poor hand going into the offseason. They've handled it as well as possible. But I'm looking for them to make one more forward splash to really, like, get my attention. Then I'm like, yes, we need to be talking about the Senators right now. And, again, I feel bad doing that. They were the dark horse of last year. I think we all underestimated them, and then they come into the playoffs, and it's like, wow, this team is like, you know, Kane's light. You're not there yet, but there's a lot that's fascinating there. So they should be in the conversation, of course. I feel like the entire Atlantic Division, though, is so good there. You know, the Central, we look at the top of it and we're like, this is incredible. But the Atlantic is the one, like, you try to pretend you care about the rest, but you're looking over your shoulder the whole time. Like, no, the Atlantic division's where it's at. So, like, every matchup is good here.
Well, the one thing, you know, you look at the Chicago team coming in for the Sabres home opener on October 3rd. Injury aside, what will Bedard's contract look like by that day?
I would assume it's done and completely managed.
How high, though?
How high?
In wake of the injury.
I don't think the injury is going to affect anything for him, honestly. Mm. I think it's the Carlson of it all that's going to be the bigger factor here. Before Carlson signed the contract, I would have guessed 12 or 13, 18-year, 8-year deal, which he should have never signed. But, like, that would have been my guess. Now I'm thinking, like, 15. I don't think they go up to the 18 that Carlson got. But I could see it going to like the $15 million range, and I'm going to say shave off a couple years and go for that 5 or 6 year deal because you have a great chance to cash in once more, and who knows what the cap's going to look like by then.
Do you have to sign Celebrini now at $19 million?
Hand him everything. Give him it all.
Give him everything. Okay, good.
Give him everything.
Celebrini will have his extension by the time Shayna rejoins us, which is not next week, but the following week. Those are my predictions for the next couple. Enjoy the summer, and we'll see you soon, Shayna.
Thanks for having me.
Shayna Goldman from The Athletic. You can see her work online, and we have Dazzled and Disturbed coming up.
We do.
Get back with more of Sabres Live, presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
Our big day continues. It's Give 716, our annual community-wide tradition of giving back to so many not-for-profits in our community. Give716.org is where you go for all the info.
Yeah, and there's great power hours and incentive hours coming up here.
A lot of big bucks raised already.
A lot of big bucks raised. We're over $1.1 million, approaching 1.2. And at 1 p.m., Wegmans is going to match $25,000 matching donation in the 2 o'clock hour. Sabres tickets for the first 100 donations of $171.60. So that's going to go quick. Like, again, if you want Sabres tickets, 2 p.m. right away, KeyBank later, and the golden ticket at 8 p.m. tonight, $50 or more. And there's so many great prizes for that.
Indeed. And if we had video from last night and the launch of Give 716, it would have fallen into both categories of D and D.
Dazzled and
disturbed.
Those who were there know exactly what we're talking about.
My microphone failure was disturbed.
Microphone failure and horrible mini football toss by you.
I don't even want to talk about that.
Okay, so let's show something even more disturbing. Imagine sitting in here in our studio or being a reporter and having a cockroach crawling all over you on live television.
Not a small one. That thing is massive. And this reporter in L.A., she did our live hit, and this cockroach is going up her hair and up her neck and chest and going up and around. And then the reaction for me would have been horror, right? And then she goes off the air. She drops her mic and she just shakes it off a little bit. I'm like, I would have been running like a madman, like, oh my, get this thing off of me.
Yeah.
Crazy.
I'm reluctant to shed my shirt in public, but I would probably be
like, this thing is being burned. Throw it in the garbage can. George Babcock would have done something else with that.
Oh, he would have ate it live on air.
Well, exactly. That's what it is.
My goodness. Okay, I'm assuming this is dazzled.
Yes.
Although, depending on your perspective, it could be otherwise. A 77-year-old woman in Florida receives a new license plate. Now, I think my mind immediately thinks that this would be better if it was a Georgia plate and a peach, in the middle instead of the Florida oranges. But SQZA55, how does it read?
Well, it reads squeeze the you know, whatever. A55 could also be a couple of S's. Now, it's funny enough, in New York State, if you were trying to get this license plate as a one of those you know, plates that you choose, they wouldn't let it happen. Mm. But this was not requested. This just randomly was given to this Florida woman. That is pretty crazy, and I think she's like kind of showcasing it.
Yeah, her nails look good in the process too, so I think she's very proud of it. Disturbed in 2020, sorry, not 2027. We're almost at 2027,
yes.
And that would make it 20 years ago that Messi found himself in this photo shoot.
Yeah, so the Barca Foundation, Barcelona, basically with UNICEF, they were doing a calendar shoot. And back in those, Yamal's family lived there, and they're like, they submitted to maybe be part of the shoot. There's baby Yamal in the, you know, bathtub, and Lionel Messi was baiting him in a photo shoot, and now they're about to face off in the World Cup final because Yamal's this Spanish great player, and Argentina, with their comeback yesterday, they're facing on Sunday. So
the equivalent would be somebody's baby in the Stanley Cup. Right?
Kinda.
And then 20 years later, that baby is still facing off against, like, the aging Jaromir Jagr.
It would probably have to be something like that. Like, say, we did a photo shoot years ago, and now we're facing in the Olympic gold medal, maybe would be even
Argentina
better.
Or Spain?
I'm going to take Argentina. What a comeback yesterday. And you know what? Shame on me. Again, disturb. Because I watched most of the game. Argentina was coming back. With about 10 minutes left, my son goes, you know, Argentina comes back in all the games. And I'm like, yeah, I got to get ready to go to the Give 716 event. So I missed the first goal. And then I got in the car and I missed the second goal and I missed the comeback. And he called me and he's like, did you see this? This was crazy. And I'm like, I missed it. So shame on me. I missed it. I should have stuck it out to the end and watched the whole thing. I thought it was going to go to extras maybe at 1-1. So I'm like, I'll get there and catch maybe the penalty kicks at Riverworks. Well, it didn't happen.
Happy birthday, Jordan LaBarber of Sabres.com.
Oh, yes, always a scrum lurker. And he always gets into all these videos and all that. But Jordan is awesome. Wonder what he's doing on his birthday.
I don't know. What are you doing this weekend?
I don't know what I'm doing. You know, there's a big sale happening at the store in East Aurora at 4 Honeybees Cottage, so that's going to be busy. And next week's my son's birthday, so I think we're going to get some barbecue. I know. Whatever.
Sneaky good plug. I looked and I liked it on social as well.
No, good job.
We will reappear on social later today, and we'll see you on Monday for Sabres Live.